1 Samuel chapter 8. Now it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Look, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." So Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, with which they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now therefore, heed their voice, however you shall solemnly forewarn them, and show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them." So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And he said, "This will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for his own chariots and to be his horsemen, and some will run before his chariots. He will appoint captains over his thousands and captains over his fifties, will set some to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and some to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields, your vineyards, and your olive groves, and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers and servants. And he will take your male servants, your female servants, your finest young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep and you will be his servants. And you will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day." Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he repeated them in the hearing of the Lord. So the Lord said to Samuel, "Heed their voice and make them a king." And Samuel said to the men of Israel, "Every man go to his city."
So as we read through this, now it's a relatively short chapter if you hadn't noticed. So I don't have a lot of commentary on it, but the next chapter is too long to try to combine them. So they are slight division, but there are a few things that happened here. First of all, are there any questions or comments about chapter 8 of 1 Samuel? Something that caught your attention, something that you thought would be interesting to discuss, or a question that didn't make any sense to you?
This is a very, very sad thing. I mean, you know, every time I read this, you can almost just kind of hear the pain in the Lord as he says this. You know, it's like, you know, they haven't rejected you, they've rejected me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, Tammy.
And also, I mean, can you think of anything worse for a father than for people to say to your face, "Your sons aren't as good as you"?
Quite disgraceful. Quite disgraceful. I mean, that's something which I would not wish upon anybody because it's humiliating.
By now they call him old.
Yes, they do call him. He's not that old, but they do call him old, which we'll get into that. We'll get into that as to why they call him old. Yes, David.
I found it kind of interesting that he says, "Your finest young men and your donkeys," that they're so close together.
Value. They're just too. they know the proper value of a donkey.
Both stubborn.
Yes. All right. So, okay, let's start out as a comment. Old. They comment, okay, these elders, they come up to Samuel. Of course, Samuel's becoming older. Now, Samuel's supposed to be dead at the age of 52. He's not 52 yet because he's still alive. So how old really can he be?
40.
In his 40s? Roughly? Oh, that's not old. Why do they call him old? Depends on your perspective. If you know that so-and-so has to retire at a certain age because of his job and the definition of it, he's getting very old for a Levite servant. They can't serve past a certain age. So once he's done serving, guess what? They got nothing. Nobody to reign. Nobody to take over. They don't have any new judges on the rise, you know, as they normally have had over the years. And they don't want to go back like they used to. They had to wait until some enemy came over and took them over again before another judge rises. So as far as the people are concerned, he is getting old. Because they know his time's coming to an end. Not that they know he's going to die. They know that his servant, as being able to overseer of the sacrifices, all of those are going to end. He's getting very old. He better have a successor, because his sons aren't good enough. They're not following it. So old, not in the form where we think of somebody as old and decrepit. Old is in that you can no longer do your task much longer. You have to end it quickly. So, just depends on what you're looking at. Yes, Susan.
He must have been quite depressed, because on one hand, you've got Israel, who he's been ministering to for so long, who have really failed to get it that God wants to be their king. And on the other hand, his own two sons have ended up rather like Eli's sons.
Exactly, just worthless as they were.
The very thing he saw when he was a little boy.
Yeah.
That's kind of... Just in terms of a ministry,
it would tear you apart.
In terms of having served the Lord your whole life, mm-hmm. and longing for his people to get it, it must have been a very bitter end to the whole, what did you say it was, 40 years of...
50 years of service.
50 years.
Of service, yeah.
That must have been just like dry toast in his mouth.
That personally, I don't want to think about that. I have a little son. I don't want him to turn out to be that bad. But you're right. It's very devastating inside of somebody.
It often happens.
It does. It does.
People who have been faithful in their service to the Lord.
It does.
I think we have to just come to grips with that.
Oh, it does. It's just difficult. It's just hard.
It's not always glory for the person.
No, it's not. It's not. And it's not supposed to be.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you'd have a dynasty.
Exactly.
Which was only reserved...
Yeah.
Or ended up being reserved for David and his line. Nobody else is allowed to be that.
But I think it opens up our minds to the possibility that in God's eyes, success and failure is not what we think it is.
Right. Which I think is fascinating. Because he did exactly what he needed to do at the time which he was given. When it came to Philistines and bringing the people back, he did it. Well, obviously with God's power with it. But he was the right man at the right time. Perfect for it. God used him. He carried out his tasks. Not much different than anybody else. Once God's done with you, well, I don't need you anymore. You did the task you were allotted to. Once you've accomplished it, I don't need you. Thank you. Rest. Stop. Honestly, stop. I mean, if I use a hammer and I don't need the hammer anymore, like, don't need it at all. Why would I? Yeah, I mean, put it away or I get rid of it. I'll replace it with something else. It's no different. It's the same principle. Once it's used and been used, it doesn't need to be reused. That's for Messiah's application. Yes, Jeff.
And maybe that indeed was the reason why you have the judge as the man of the hour or the woman of the hour, because
it's a temporary thing.
Because otherwise people left with a hammer are going to go around and bash things
and destroy things they shouldn't be. Yes, many of the kings did that. Okay, so that's regarding age. That was talking about age. Yes, David.
And again, that's why God is not interested in dynasties, because that's usually how you die. Nasty.
Oh. Oh. All right.
I'm glad I say dynasty.
Fever for you. It's red line.
All right. Now, if you notice my little map I have up here, which I like to use maps, I have a few of the towns. I just have the red area, which is Philistine territory. It's a lot smaller now than it used to be because they shrank down. It's not as small as I would like it to be, but it currently is this size. Well, not today, but I mean at this point in time in their history. What I want you to notice is the city locations of where Samuel's sons are serving. Way south in Beersheba, under Judah's territory. Okay? Note, Ramah is up here between Ephraim and Benjamin border, which is where Samuel lives. And Jerusalem is also along that same, the other end of the border, further the south in between Benjamin and Judah is where Jerusalem is. North end, Ramah, is between Benjamin and Ephraim. Now I just have Dan here just to give a general idea of where his territory was. Why would I place these here? Question: why am I pointing them out to you? This is here. The men that come and talk to Samuel, who do you think they are? Well, let's read that a little bit. This doesn't tell us a lot of information, but it gives us a hint of something we might be actually dealing with, a political deal that's going on. His sons did not follow his way, verse 3. All the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel to Ramah, said, "You've grown old, your sons do not follow your ways, so now appoint us a king and judge like all the other nations." Well, wait a minute. Are his sons serving in Manasseh? No. Do they judge anything that happens in Manasseh? No. Are they serving in Zebulun? No. Ephraim? No. Benjamin? Not likely. I mean, they might travel that far north, but most likely they're staying down here south, based in Judah, like it says. They're in Beersheba. Being a people and elders who read, if I was in Judah and I was an elder and I happened to have read a particular prophecy and it was in my mind about this particular prophecy that I knew happened and it was supposed to happen at one point in time or another, I would be advocating, if I was slightly corrupt, to fulfill that prophecy. The prophecy I'm referring to is in Genesis 49, chapter 49, verse 10, which I grabbed the wrong book. Because what I find fascinating is the actual request that they're asking for. Genesis 49, let me get there real quick here. It's a prophecy regarding each of the descendants of the tribes. And this is Jacob's blessings. What happens with Judah?
Oh.
Judah. Now, granted, Judah is the recipient of Joel and Abijah's corruptness right now, down here in Beersheba. They're the ones who are being judged by these two corrupt individuals who are descendants of Samuel. It's their best interest to get rid of them. They don't want to go into corruption anymore than anybody else does. They don't want corrupt people as leadership, as much like anybody else would. Their interest is to get rid of him. What they're asking for, though, is a king. I believe because of this. Judah, this is verse 8. "You, your brothers shall acknowledge. Your hand will be at your enemy's nape. Your father's sons will prostrate themselves before you. A lion cub is Judah. From the prey, my son, you elevate yourself. He crouches, lies down like a lion, and like an awesome lion. Who dares to rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a scholar from amongst his descendants, till Shiloh arrives. And he will be an assemblage of nations." Knowing that that is the prophecy given to Judah, and all of Judah's elders would know that that is a prophecy given, because after all, schooled in it, you don't get to be an elder unless you can read. You only have one thing you got to read. Your history, you better know it. I believe it is actually Judah's main thrust of their elders, their goal, is to get rid of the judge system, to establish their system, a king, a monarchy. Now, is this all the Judah's and elders of the Judah's responsibility? Of course not. I'm just saying, I think there's a political maneuvering happening Because they didn't ask Samuel, we need a new judge. They didn't ask him, we need a new leader. They asked him, we need a king to lead us. A little bit different. That's my personal opinion on the matter. I think there's a political maneuvering happening here. It slightly backfired in that God didn't choose someone from Judah at first. He did eventually, but not at first. He chose someone from a different tribe. But I think that's a scenario that is occurring here, that they're rejecting the leadership in order to get what they think they want, which fulfills this prophecy, puts one tribe in charge of everybody else's tribe. And we'll get into the abuses of that tribe very shortly from now. Yes, Jeff.
Which is probably why the first king was picked from the tribe it was, to shoot that.
To shoot that, exactly. I think that's exactly the reason. Now, it was a short duration. I mean, Saul was not king for very long, very short period of time before David took over. It was a matter of, I think, 2 years. Really short, yes.
It's also interesting that there are other similar actions in Scripture where humans try to hurry up God's, you know, like...
It happens very frequently.
Yes, like people marrying Sarah, they take Hagar.
Right.
Because we'll have
accelerate something. Rebecca with yeah, it happens.
And usually the end result is disaster. And
yeah, it never works right.
What you've got here.
Exactly. Saul ends up being a disaster. Not because God didn't know what he was doing. It's just that's just Saul, and that's how God intended it to happen.
Power curves, absolutely, yeah.
Always. But, which we may be experiencing currently, but we'll discuss that another time.
But the thing comes in is that if that is indeed what the leadership of Yehuda were looking for, is this the scepter, did they even bother to figure out what the Shiloh was that was supposed to end that?
Maybe not. I don't know. Had they paid attention, they may have learned some lessons up there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my personal opinion. I just want to put it out there because I think it's interesting that it's such a unique request. They didn't ask to just be, and they didn't even ask for just a king. They asked for a king to be like the other nations, who God has been beating up and fighting all this whole past 400 years. But you want to be like them, having a ruler that dictates. And now, of course, Samuel goes to this. These are all things about what this king's going to do. Their response was, yeah, give him to us anyway. That's what we want. That's the goal. That's what we're after. It's quite unique. Why would somebody ask for all these things? Well, because you ask for power, usually, because you think it's going to be given to you.
Wow.
Yes, David.
It's amazing to see the parallel there from of old to today. It's like what I've seen in the Christian church. It's like we want to do, smell, and act just like the world, but still be called Christians.
Right. It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. Yet you see that in humanity. You know, they still want to play like the world, but still be different, and you can't be.
Right. There is a separation. I don't know who to hand up first. Jeff, you go first.
With the judge system, you have to have faith, trust in God.
Because he's the one who's in control, tells the judge what to do.
You don't know when the judge is going to come, when they're going to rise, how bad it's going to get before the judge shows up. So with the king system, even though it's bad, at least you know what to
expect. It's consistent. It's consistently evil.
Consistently bad.
Yeah. Yes.
I see such a parallel from then to exactly what is happening right now in the world.
Mm-hmm. That is true, and I think it's not accidental that it's like that. It's on purpose. I think God's doing this for a reason today, on a much grander scale than most of us have ever read about or studied. Yes, Susan.
I just wanted to say that the Lord had been very clear in the Torah, albeit perhaps, depending when the book of Deuteronomy was codified, but the Lord had made it quite clear about kings, hadn't he? What they were going to do.
Right, and what was allowed and what was not allowed.
Yeah.
This, we're going to discuss what they allowed and not allowed and how kings abused that as we go through this, but I'll cover a little bit of that today, not very much. Because the kings do it, not these guys. Yes, Richard.
What you're saying is true. I begin to see now separation starting to take place from Judah and the rest of the tribes. Because it goes back to Judah himself.
Yeah.
Who separated
himself. He divided himself. He separated himself out.
His brothers So he was...
Was not part of them. Build his own. I'm independent of you.
Yeah.
Kind of attitude. It's an elitist type of mentality.
Basically, the West was in the Jewish world itself.
Still has been.
Still has been.
Which is probably the only reason why they're still around.
That's right.
They long since been wiped out years ago. Okay, let's move forward. I got to get through this. Okay. Samuel, of course, takes this very poorly. Why? Why would Samuel take this poorly? Well, we've discussed this in the past. We'll discuss it again today. What are the duties of a judge? Well, a judge has the task of gathering the people together for battles, trying to help the people to be at one... Or no, correction. This is a judge. That's a prophet. To help the people to be as holy as they can be, relatively speaking, because some of them were good at that, some of them were rather horrible. Converse that to a prophet, or compare that to a prophet. Well, a prophet's job is not to gather people together for war. It is, however, supposed to continuously fight and break down the barriers between God and man. That's what prophets do. Hey, God's saying you should go do X, Y, Z. Thus, I am communicating through this barrier that God won't talk to you directly because you're too either disgusting or not acceptable or God's angry with you, whatever reason, who knows. I'm breaking through this barrier as a prophet to give you the message that God needs you to know. So then they go do it. It's to get across that barrier that God wants to be with people. So the reason I break these up into stupid categories is because a judge has both tasks in some ways. But he is supposed to communicate to people and communicate God's will with the people. He's also supposed to bring their military might and get things done. Well, as we were studying with Moses and studying with Joshua, and we were discussing them, that after that, God started to separate, that there were groups of people that were still classified as prophets and other groups that were more like judge-like in their nature. We had that with the prophets would come and talk to some of the judges. Hey, God said blank to you. Go do it. Like for Eli, for example. He's a judge, high priest as well. He used to be a prophet, but wasn't anymore. A prophet came and told Eli, God's going to wipe you out. Samuel didn't, but a prophet did. Samuel just repeated it a second time a few days or hours or years later, whatever. So you have a group definition or a separation between judges and prophets. So what are the people asking for? Are they asking for a new prophet? No. They're asking for the military aspect of it. The ruler, the dictatorishness of it. Not the prophetic, not the communication with God aspect. Samuel took it quite clearly when God corrects him in this chapter as rejection of him completely, both the military aspect and the prophetic aspect. But God says, no, Samuel, they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me. Well, God's job as a judge was supposed to direct them in the military fashion as well. And God says, heed their voice. Three times he tells Samuel, heed their voice in verse 7, 9, and 22. Listen to them. Obey it. They're rejecting me. Yeah, God's upset. Samuel's upset. Because Samuel, although he does eventually anoint Saul and, of course, then David, the people still go to him. Over the next, throughout Saul's brief reign and inching into David's, people still go to him for his Levitical tasks, for his prophetic abilities, for his communicating with God. They don't go to him if they're having an invasion. They're dividing him up so that God is saying, Samuel, this is okay. Divide it up. Is God happy? Well, no. Is he angry? No. Imagine if you or I rejected God. Just, I don't want you to go away. Would he be happy? No. Would he be angry? Maybe. He'd be sad, most likely. Disappointed, much like a father having their son reject them. That's the emotional that you're going after here, that God's experiencing. Does he send an enemy to come and take the people out because they rejected him? No. Yeah, not yet. No, he doesn't. Why?
Grace.
Sort of. Grace is part of it. Well, see, God planned this a long time earlier. He already knew they were going to go for a king. What do you think is written in the Deuteronomy? It's written in, and even Joshua mentions it a couple of times. It's written in obviously here in Samuel. All things the king's going to do to you. He already knew ahead of time they're going to go for a king. Mm-hmm. Why do you think he has the Messiah going along the line of David? If there was never a monarchy, the Messiah would never be a king. It wouldn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You can call him King of Kings if he's never been a king of anything. Mm-hmm. And people who don't have kings don't know what they are. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. God knew full ahead of time they were going to ask for a king. Mm-hmm. He's just telling Samuel, it's not that they're rejecting you wholly. They're rejecting me and my leadership. There's a difference. Did that help Samuel? That's debatable. But this is what's going on between Samuel, the conversation between Samuel and God. Yes, Jeff.
Maybe what he wanted them to do is to hunger and thirst after righteousness.
Which would have been ideal.
After they went through so many kings that were so bad and roller coaster up and down in the other, there was this messianic fervor for the king who would be righteous.
Continuous, exactly. Righteous. Which we're going to get to there. Because he talks about... He talks about that. God does mentions one liner. Yes, Susan.
Ultimately, I'm thinking that the whole issue is kingship. It's taking God, Yahweh, at His word. For example, in Egypt, they were complaining that God
and they had a king.
They
yes, Pharaoh.
They had him. And God had called him into relationship, but they weren't listening. There was a constant questioning of God's leadership, God's lordship, God's kingship over them as a people.
Mm-hmm.
You have the same thing at the end of, at the beginning of Judges. Every man did what was right in his own eyes.
There's no
king. It's that refusal to bend the knee as to a king, to submit,
be under God.
To be under God, so they're constantly wanting this human thing. And as for poor old Samuel, I think during, just on a very human level, that during his time as judge over Israel, he is disappointed because it feels to him like he has not, in all of his judgment, not imputed, they didn't hear the truth.
It didn't last.
A prophet is already conditioned to be rejected.
Right.
Right? A judge isn't. Obviously, if you are a respected teacher, a respected judger, or what, if you
right,
call
right,
them
right,
that,
call them, right.
You know what? You do, you're a disappointment. They didn't get it. They're still not hearing. Nothing's changed.
Which is God's point. Nothing's changed. It's okay. Nothing's changed, Samuel. So God tells Samuel, it's not you, it's me they're actually rejecting. Essentially, get over yourself. Go ahead and do what they ask. Kind of attitude. God, I'm sure, is hurt.
He's wounded.
And this is his... Yeah, he threatens them. He tells Samuel, tell them what a king's going to do. And this is one line, which I think is actually two lines. I think it's interesting that Samuel reports, which I never really thought about this in the past, but it is true in different ways. Let's see, of course, Samuel tells the people, all right, these are all things that's going to happen. He'll reign over you. He'll take away your sons. He'll take your daughters. He'll arbitrarily appoint things. He'll tax you a tithe, a 10% tax on everything on top of whatever you give to for tithing, like religious tithe. So it's a good hefty hit. Take your daughters to your perfumers, cooks, bakers. He'll confiscate your best fields, your vineyards, your olive trees. Present them to his servants. Now, are we talking about his slaves? No. A king's servants are the people who serve him, like work with him. Counselors, advisors. We have that in our political system. We have lots and lots of advisors. They get, I don't know how much money they make. They make a lot of money. No different. They get paid. The king says, hey, you be my advisor. That field over there looks good. It's yours. I don't care who owned it. It's yours now. Kind of attitude. No, not that's acceptable behavior, but that's what king's going to do. And it does happen. We find that does happen. We'll read as the months go on, we'll read about kings doing precisely that. So it's not like it's unheard of. Let's see. He will take, this is verse 17. He'll take the tenth of your sheep, and you will be his slaves. You will be his slaves. I find that an interesting statement. What does he mean, you will be his slaves? In many ways you are. If a king shows up, or say, for example, we live in a monarchy system, are we the slaves of the king? In a couple of ways we are, not just one. Yes, Bill.
I was watching this DVD that Billy's got by that Franz.
Oh, Norm Franz, yes.
And what he's talking about in this DVD about financial, people are in debt.
Yes, slaves to a debt system.
Slaves to the debtor, or whoever they're borrowing out from. See some of that in this.
And it is true. We still use the slave system. We just painted new colors, a little bit of cleaning of the walls, but it's still the same. The system never changes. We're still slaves.
The idea of the whole Jubilee thing.
Right, which is supposed to be freedom, which never actually happened when the king showed up, unfortunately. Okay, so slaves. Not only are we talking slaves. The ambition, I think of slaves. I think of like a guy with a whip and whipping the person. I think of a slave in that fashion because that's what in U.S. history, that's just the nature of what slaves would think of. Well, yeah, the kings did that. Solomon in particular did that. So did Rehoboam did that, which of course caused major divisions. One of the things caused major divisions. But there's another form of slavery. Conscription.
Indentured
servants. You, I need a military man. How? What's your age? What's your size? It's like, okay, you are now part of my military. Grab your stuff. Say goodbye to your wife, your kids, your family, whatever, your property, because you probably won't make it back. You're mine. Your parents, whatever they say, think, or do, who cares? They can curse me as king. I don't really mind. You're now part of my military. There's that form of slavery, too. And every family in Saul, when he becomes king, becomes subject to that. Doesn't matter who you are, what family you come from, if you have somebody available for military use, I as king dictate that they belong to me. I don't have to pay them money. I don't have to give them anything. As long as I feed them, clothe them, shelter them, that's pretty much it. I'll give them some tools to fight with. I don't want to get barehanded thing. That doesn't work so well. But that's about all I have to do.
And all they have to do is obey my orders.
All they have to do is obey. No matter what it is, they have to obey. And the kings do precisely that.
Which is what they ask for, because they say specifically, we want somebody who will lead us.
Who will lead us into battle. And whenever that battle takes place, whoever is responsible for it, whoever is on the front line, of course it would never be the king himself usually, whoever is on the front line, and they're the ones who usually die first. But they're all slaves. Now, I bring this up because in chapter 17 of this book, which we're not there yet, David, of course, is David Goliath's story. We've all read this many, many times. There is an incentive to the person given, to the person who kills Goliath. And, oh, well, yes, because his Saul's daughter. Well, that was the incentive. No, that was one of the incentives. What was the other one? It says your family will no longer be subservient to the king. Your family line will no longer be subject to this arbitrary whim of taking away any man, woman, or child from that line. Any property from that line. That's a lot of incentive. That's a big deal. You essentially, it's a get out of jail free card throughout all your generations.
It's one way ticket to the aristocracy.
Exactly. Yes, Jeff.
Which is very interesting how that plays out, because the reason why David is able to go out there is because he is heading out into battle with trust in God, that God is going to fight the battle. Which
exactly.
Is the people were wanting the king to go out there and fight the battle.
The king wouldn't do it. But Daniel, the perfect, so to speak, king, though he wasn't king yet, did exactly what the people wanted to do back here when they're talking to Samuel.
Right.
To lead. Well, kings don't do that. They try to stay back because they're really royalty and they like each other. Okay. Timeline. How old is Samuel? I told you he's probably in his late 40s. Actually, he is around his late 40s. About 49 to 50, give or take a year. Not exactly positive. When he loses, use that term, his judgeship. That means he was a judge for about 11 years. Short time. So wait a minute. If he was judged for 11 years, and this is about 11 years after the whole debacle with the Ark of the Covenant being in the Philistine hands and all that stuff happening, And he's supposed to, which we'll read next chapter, anoint Saul. How old was Saul? Ah, he's a lot older than 20. A lot older than 20. Because as we've already read, correction, as we mentioned, we didn't read it yet. We sort of read it. The Ark of the Covenant, when it comes back from the Philistines, it goes into one guy's house for 20 years. And then David brings it out of that house over into the city of David. Okay, do the math. If Samuel reigns for 11 years, and this is 11 years later, that we're talking 9 years from the time when David, as king, brings that ark over to his new territory, new area, new location he's building. David can't be king until he's at a certain minimum age to go to battle. Israel law, you don't go to battle unless you're age 20 or older. So David and Goliath, which that only happens about a year or two from here, about a year and a half actually, from this point in time when Saul's anointed. David and Goliath, well, David's 20 years old in a year and a half from this point. David was alive then when the Philistines had the Ark of the Covenant. So was Saul. It's basic math. They're both alive. Not only were they alive, Saul has sons. Jonathan, one of David's best friends, approximately similar age. Well, if Jonathan's about 20 years old, roughly the same age as David, Jonathan was alive when this happened, which means Jonathan's around at the youngest, 9 or 10, when the Ark of the Covenant was in Philistines territory. That means Saul's got to be at minimum 30, if not 40, by the time he's anointed king. He's an older man.
But chapter 9 calls him a young man.
Yes, he is a young man.
Is Saul living to be quite old still?
No, compared to what he's doing, he's a young man. Young man, don't think a young man is age only. Young man has status involved. As a young man, I can be under my father's house. I can be 50 and be under my father's house.
And he'd still be young.
Still be classified as young. Young doesn't, don't think of age. Think of task, responsibility as young. He's a small, Saul becomes the smallest, they're the smallest tribe, smallest family, the weakest, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't mean their age is young. They're of no value to anybody. They haven't done anything of value. They haven't done anything of importance yet. There's a reason why Saul's much older than, and it's just straight basic math. And they call David a lad. Well, that isn't true. If he was actually a lad, like we think of the word lad as like a teenager, a young preteen, that wouldn't make any sense for him to try to put Saul's armor on. If Saul's a head and shoulders above everybody else, he's got to be at least around, 6'5", 7 foot? And you put a 6'5", 7 foot man's armor on a boy? Good luck. Not only would he say he couldn't carry it, why would Saul even think of such a thing? It would be silly. You go find somebody else's armor, put it on him. Because David's not that small. He's young in that he's the youngest of his family, David's case. But Saul is not that young. He's much older than what we think of being young. We think of young, teens, 20s. Saul most likely is in his 30s, 40s when he anointed king. Most likely. Now, we don't know his exact age. It's not technically recorded. But he's only reigned king for 2 years. No, he's in there for 4 years. He's not reigned king for 40 years.
Okay.
He's reigned king for 2 years. David then takes over, though there's the split kingship for a while. David takes over for a while then. So he only is king for 2 years. Then David's around. Uncontested king for 2 years. Then David shows up. And David, of course, is relatively young when he does so as well. We're going to get to that as we go along. So all these guys aren't as old as we imagine them to be. And all these events are actually much closer together than we imagine them to be. Most of these guys knew about it. Most of these guys were alive when it happened. I wouldn't be surprised personally if Saul wasn't part of that army of Israel that came at the end of this when the Ark of the Covenant came back and the Philistines came to attack. He'd be about the right age. I wouldn't be surprised if he was part of it. I'm not saying he is. He could have been. Some argue he wasn't because he didn't recognize Samuel by when he looked at him face to face. So he may not have been, but it's hard to say. Okay, so let's continue on. Acceptable behaviors of a king. This Samuel lists off a few of them. Now, of course, Deuteronomy lists off a whole lot more. Lots of things that kings do. Are those condoned by God, then, because the Bible says it's what a king can do or will do?
No.
No. What is condoned? Well, the limitations that God puts on a king is condoned. Which he says, you will not develop chariots, you will not produce horses, you will not steal, take, do the various things that kings know. Do whatever you want, lots of wives. None of those are allowed. But yet, he claims quite clearly in Samuel as well as in Deuteronomy, it will happen. This has been a debate amongst Jewish scholars. Well, if the Bible says that God says it will happen, then it must be okay if it does.
Nope.
No. Just because I say something is going to happen doesn't mean I want it to, though I may allow it. Doesn't mean I want it to.
Stop it.
And it won't stop it. And this, the one caveat God puts in it. Well, I'll get this again. Yes, Bill.
Whose responsibility is to tell him so? The elders?
The prophet's responsibility to tell him so.
Yeah, that's
prophet's
his
job.
That's his own handwritten copy of the Torah.
Yes, his own handwritten copy, which they're all supposed to write down. I don't know if all of them actually did, but they're all supposed to. I don't think if they did, they wrote it in some other language or hired somebody else to write for them. Exactly, exactly. What's the one thing God says at the end of this that gets God out of any problems?
Verse 18, where he says, you're going to cry out to me because of the king you've chosen for yourself.
And I will not answer you on that day.
You get what you ask.
Now, he didn't say, I won't save you from your enemies. He didn't say, I won't help you along your various issues throughout the next, you know, 1,000 years or a couple thousand years, whatever it is. He didn't say any of that. I won't save you from your king. I'll save you from other stuff, but not your king. Whatever your king does, whatever happens to him, that's independent of my hand. Meaning, bad things it is. I won't save you from him, or actually her in one case, because they do have a queen for a short period of time. I won't save you from him or her. Whatever they do, you wanted it, you got it. Other stuff, I'll still work with you, because I'm not going to forsake my people. I won't forsake the deal with Abraham. I won't forsake the prophets who are there, who are still talking to you.
It's like
those won't go away. But this one thing you're asking for, you got what you wanted. I won't save you from
limited.
That. What was that?
Grace is limited.
Grace is limited. In all areas except whatever the king does. I won't save you from the king. Not that he won't kill a king. I won't save you, the people, from the king. Yes.
It's interesting that that language is reflective of the Exodus as well. In the Exodus, the people's cry came before God's ears.
Mm-hmm.
And he heard their cry. Here, he will not hear their cry.
Won't hear it. He won't hear it, which is fantastically done it, and they still said that's okay.
The issue is still slavery.
It is. It never goes away.
Exactly.
Yes, Jeff.
Until their king gets wrested away from them.
Well, the king's finally gone.
In the case of the exiles, their kings were taken out of the picture. They're hauled off, and then God brings them out.
Brings them. That's seven. Because they're no longer. He's not bringing the king out. He doesn't save them from. We have bad kings for sure. We read about quite a few of them actually. Really horrible ones. Some had short reigns, some had really long reigns. There was no rhyme or reason to how long they reigned. Ideally, if a bad king was bad, you think, oh, okay, he dies early. No. If a good king's good, he reigns for a long time. No. Whatever happens regarding the king, happens. Now, God still kills kings, and he still gets rid of them and does various things. Not to protect the people from them. But for his own purposes. Because he has political issues he's got to deal with. He's got other countries he's got to deal with too. He's not saving the people from those kings. Yes, Susan.
And the irony is they cried, give us a king. And when he did give them a king, they didn't want him.
Yeah. Exactly. They didn't want him. Take him back. Too late. Too late.
No, I was talking about Messiah.
Oh, that one.
Yes,
ah.
That one.
I was referring to Saul himself.
It's historical irony, isn't it?
That is true. That is true.
Where
they didn't want the one they actually got.
That he gave
that
them,
that they should
they
have. The king they should have wanted too. The thing they originally asked or originally desired wasn't what they were looking for.
Yeah, we have no king who's the son of Judah. We have a king from Rome.
Right.
We
right.
have no king but Caesar.
Yeah. Okay, anything else I want to cover today? Oh, he says, okay, I'll crown a king for them so they all send their own country, which we'll get in the next chapter, their own cities, their own towns. Why? Go away. Go to your own towns, because God's got to choose which one he's going to select. Samuel doesn't know who it is. No one knows who it is. And I'm willing to bet God didn't actually know who it was yet, because they could have said, okay, never mind. And God regrets the choice he makes when he says, you know what, I don't want Saul. Sorry, Samuel, let's go find another one. So I don't know if God truly had in mind the precise person yet or was just waiting for David to get old enough. Hard to say. Maybe David was just too young. I don't know. But I don't know if God actually wanted Saul to be king in the long term, long run. It wouldn't make sense because then it would contradict the whole prophecy in Genesis. Eventually, you'd have to choose somebody from the line of Judah.
Right. But, I mean, as we'll see, Saul's heart in the beginning
was decent.
Right, headed in the right direction.
He quickly changed.
It took quite a left turn. Quite
yeah, quickly. Yeah, yeah. He quickly changed.
Right turn.
Your turn. Right turn. Thank you. I finished decently on time. And next time we'll get into actually who God chooses.